This is the State of Things from the Upstage Cabaret at Triad Stage in downtown Greensboro. I'm Frank Stacio. Greensboro gives its regards to Broadway. A planned new performing arts center has generated $35 million in private pledges and $30 million from the city. After years of debate, the Greensboro City Council has approved a plan for the development of a performing arts center downtown. Similar arts centers in Durham and Charlotte have brought revenue and recognition to those cities, and some folks in Greensboro hope to see similar results right here. But critics worry that the returns may not justify the investment. Greensboro Bureau Chief Jeff Tiberi is here with us now. Welcome, Jeff. Good to have you. So this decision has been a long time coming. Tell us what the package looks like.
So it's a 50-year deal that was reached earlier this month, and there are several moving parts to it, but this is similar to how DPAC, the Durham Performing Arts Center, operates. It will be owned and operated by the city of Greensboro. They will create a nonprofit entity to run the day-to-day. Matt Brown of the Greensboro Coliseum Complex, who oversees virtually everything that happens there, will oversee what is happening here. In addition, an outside company that has yet to be determined, yet to be named, will be involved to some extent as it comes to bringing in Broadway shows, booking those acts, booking some of the major traveling gigs, if you will. And then you mentioned the $35 million in pledged support. Some of those folks are going to have some influence, and they will be heard in terms of the design of the building, and that will be one of the next steps in this process.
And you've got $30 million from the city. Do you know how the Durham Performing Arts Center was financed? Was it the same kind of equation?
It was slightly different. It was through virtually no private funding. This is more of a 50-50 split. Durham is using the hotel motel tax, among other ways, to pay back that project. There may or may not be bonds. I'm not 100% certain. There were not bonds here because in order to have bonds, there must be voter approval. And I think there was a lot of concern about if this issue went to the voters, whether or not it would have been approved. So Durham is paying for it through several channels, including, I believe, $7.5 million that came from Duke University. Mayor Bill Bell of Durham said that without Duke's influence, without Duke's gift, that it wouldn't have come together as quickly and as smoothly as it did.
Well, Durham Performing Arts Center is wildly successful. It is actually the third largest grossing performing arts center in the country, believe it or not. Little old Durham, yeah. And of course, they're hoping for the same things here. So what's the payoff? What are folks saying this will do for the city?
In a word, it legitimizes. This is a major step forward. The supporters of this say this is a relevant cultural staple to Greensboro, to the Triad. This is a great arts development. And, you know, some of the supporters point to the Greensboro Coliseum Complex, which has more than half a dozen different buildings, has an aquatic center, has an amphitheater, of course, has the Greensboro Coliseum, which hosts major rock concerts and sporting events. And that facility, if you want to look at it on one hand, it loses a couple million bucks a year, but the foot traffic it generates and the acts and the things that it brings to the city, also the tax revenues, the hotel motel tax that it generates, folks say it's, you know, Greensboro would be a different place without it. And this is equally to these folks, if not more important to the growth of the city. And also it's going to be here in downtown. Coliseum Complex isn't that far away, but the Performing Arts Center is part of redevelopment efforts here in downtown, as we've seen in a lot of North Carolina cities.
So we mentioned the DPAC in Durham, and of course the good news is they did it, right? It's successful.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And they're doing it. The bad news is they're doing it. So will it be too much competition for Greensboro?
And the answer is we don't know. I've talked to some folks that say, you know, can we compare this to airports or can we compare it to professional sports teams? Who knows if there's a good comparison across industry lines? And then they say, well, you know, how much of DPAC's audience comes from Greensboro? About 10%. Will this hurt Greensboro? I'm sorry, rather, will a Greensboro Performing Arts Center hurt Durham? We just don't know. And then to me, one of the things I was wondering about is, you know, whether or not there is a good comparison elsewhere in the country for mid-sized cities that have new state-of-the-art performing arts centers. I spoke with someone from Nederlander, which is a company that works on bringing these Broadway acts around the country. And what he said to me was in almost 30 years of theater experience, He's never seen it happen, and he's confident that these two will coexist. But he couldn't say, you know, it has worked in these two medium-sized cities. So it remains to be seen, but he is confident, and I think obviously the supporters for the most part are confident that this has a lot of pledged private support and that people are going to allow these two to coexist, and hopefully it doesn't take away from Durham in any way, and Greensboro can have it as equally successful a venue.
And that's the city-to-city comparison. Then you talk to the folks, one of the worries in Durham when this was coming about was, well, what about the local performing arts centers here already, the Carolina Theater, Man Bites Dog, these little, what would happen to them? Ask them today. They're thrilled that it's there because it's generated a real appetite for the lively arts. More people are going out and therefore going to the Carolina Theater, Man Bites Dog. So that part, at least in Durham's experience, has worked out
well. And to build on that, this was a sticking point for supporters. I haven't heard this part criticized by anybody. As part of the agreement, a dollar surcharge, every ticket that is purchased from the Stephen B. Tanger Performing Center for the Arts, I think I screwed up that name, but a dollar off of every ticket that's purchased will go toward local arts groups. And this it has been widely applauded.
You got to get that right before it goes to the sign maker.
I know.
And otherwise, we're good. So let me ask you this. So the upside is pretty good for the city, pretty good for parts of the city. Here's the question. Does it benefit everybody? And as we get to the lower end of the economic spectrum, is it really a benefit all the way down the chain?
So from an entertainment standpoint, when I asked that question to Niederlander, they pushed back and I said, you know, can everybody afford to do this? And they said, you know, if you look at the pricing options, it's not all that expensive to go to some of the events at DPAC. Tickets start for $15, $20, $25. So from an entertainment standpoint, the question is, what can you do that's pretty good and pretty cheap these days? Most things is going to cost you some money. You know, there are other folks who have said the city's going to put $30 million into this. Well, what else could they put $30 million into? And, you know, we can take this conversation a number of different places. We won't do that right now, but there are questions. There are questions about if this is the best investment of the city's money for everyone in the city.
Very briefly, a timetable?
Ground is expected to break by the end of 2014, hoping for a grand opening in 2016.
All right. Well, you have also been covering the coal ash spill and the conflict between Diener and the Department of Energy and Natural Resources, which abandoned now its proposed settlement with Duke Energy. That had been controversial. That settlement, environmentalists said, didn't go far enough. They wanted a lawsuit to go ahead through the courts. Tell us about that decision by Diener.
There was a federal lawsuit filed last year over contamination of groundwater that violated state groundwater laws and the Federal Clean Water Act. The state had the option of stepping in and blocking that lawsuit, which it did. It then negotiated a proposed settlement with Duke. That proposed settlement went to the judge. Then the spill, the coal ash spill in Eden, the third largest spill in U.S. history, happened. And Diener came back because environmentalists quickly called this a sweetheart deal. The proposed settlement included a $99,000 fine, which environmentalists said was really inadequate for a $50 billion company. It also didn't require any cleanup of coal ash or removal of coal ash from the 33 ponds around the state. So Diener went back to a judge and said, all right, please don't consider our proposed settlement right now. Later that same day, federal subpoenas were handed down in an investigation into the relationship between Duke and Diener. A month later, which was last week, Diener went back to the judge and said, okay, this proposed settlement is no more, ripped it up. Now the lawsuit opens back up. So now it's an active lawsuit again.
So we have two legal cases here. One, the lawsuit against Duke Energy for its practices in storing coal ash. The second one, a federal grand jury investigating Diener for what it claims might be a too close relationship with Duke Energy.
A suspected felony is what the subpoena says. So they are looking for items of value, wire transfers, payments, things that perhaps violate the relationship that the state agency that is overseeing environmental regulations should have with the nation's largest electricity provider.
All right, and now we have this lawsuit going through that might end up with Duke Energy having to clean up the coal ash. And now a new wrinkle, another environmental group has proposed yet an alternative solution for how to clean that up, right?
So almost 2 months since the spill in Eden happened, and pretty much all the environmentalists I've talked to have been on the same page about their main sticking point is taking this coal ash that is in unlined pits or ponds or lagoons near waterways and moving it to lined landfills. The preference would be on Duke property so that it doesn't have to be loaded up on buses or trains or not buses, but dump trucks and moved elsewhere because there is some risk there. So that has been, you know, widely the suggestion. And the Blue Ridge Environmental Defense League came out yesterday with a new report. It says that there are risks of doing this and that it needs to be stored in sandstone structures, which I had not heard of before. Saltstone structures, pardon
me. Saltstone, yeah.
I had not heard of. Most of the environmentalists I talked to yesterday and today were like, well, we don't really know much about this yet. Mm. It was approved by the Department of Energy, and it was approved for hazardous waste. And again, this obviously is a polarizing topic. Environmentalists are on one side. The utility company on most of these issues is on a different side. But what the Blue Ridge Environmental Defense League said to me yesterday was, you know, this is the storage that is that is best for hazardous waste. Well, coal ash isn't considered hazardous waste. There are some people who think it should be, and it's possible the EPA will amend that by the end of the year. But this is a structure that it's new to the conversation. Right. Most folks still say that a lined landfill is a much better way of storing this.
Certainly less expensive, and yes. I think that may be key going through the lawsuit. Blue Ridge, by the way, not a party to the lawsuit. It's
no.
Just a recommendation on their part. Jeff, thank you so much for being with
Thanks,
us.
Thanks, Frank.
WNC reporter Jeff Tabiri. I was going to call him Jeff Greensboro, but you can call him that. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Bruce Pioff is here. He's going to play quite a bit for us, but he's going to play us out of this segment with Aaron Balance, and we'll be right back. Stay tuned.